Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the fifth episode of State of Our Nation. Now, today we are going to be touching on one of the issues which has grabbed everyone's attention, and this is the rising cost of living.
This podcast is brought to you by eWallet by MasiCard.
MasiCard credit card has gone digital. Download the new eWallet by MasiCard app that gives MasiCard credit card holders more power to pay bills, earn Masi points, send credit, and so much more. Easy, instant, and secure from your smartphone. Go digital with the free eWallet by MasiCard app. Now available on Google Play or the Apple App Store.
To get started or find out more, call the MasiCard hotline at 418-CARD. That's 418-2273.
We will be paying a special emphasis on the rising gas prices. We are also going to be taking things a little different today on our podcast, getting the pulse of social media this time. And by doing this, we're going to have a co-host, one influencer who is taking on this issue and is regarded as an activist in his own right. That's Mr. Olojimi Clark. I hope I have not mispronounced your name in any way. And he has been arguing that government has been taxing fuel way too high when compared to our Caribbean counterparts. He has taken action by launching a weekend protest whereby persons will purchase 388 and 310 in gas and diesel, respectively. Gas prices from 2021 have increased gradually since January, March, April, and May. Prime Minister Mia Moore-Motley has made it clear that given the losses to the Barbados economy, the public coffers as a result of COVID-19 pandemic, a government cannot afford to reduce taxes, which includes the fuel levy. That's the 40 cents fuel levy. Motley said that while government is unable to remove the 40 cents per liter tax, her administration will be extended an olive branch by placing a cap on the value added tax to offer a cushion on the impact to ordinary Barbadians. Mr. Clark, welcome. And first of all, before we get into the meat of the discussion, tell us a bit about why you took on this as your activism.
Hi, good morning to everyone. Thank you very much for having me on the show, Colville. I really appreciate the invitation. To answer your question, why did I take it up? The thing is that I actually got into this space by accident. And it actually started when Barbados was covered with the ash situation, which happened as a result of the volcano erupting in St. Vincent. Barbados was covered in ash and we were on shutdown for about 1 or 2 days. I saw these N95 masks, which the authorities were saying these are the best masks to brave the conditions or what's not. But I saw these masks and a pack of five, to my surprise, was about $30. And that sparked an outrage in me because I felt as though organizations, especially in Barbados, whenever there's some type of disaster, they try to take advantage of the consumer. So I would have done a video with respect to that. And to my surprise, it went viral. And I mean, I think like over 30, 40,000 people saw that video. And from there, I just said, you know what, maybe this is a good idea to start highlighting some issues in Barbados, because we have a lot of things that happen in Barbados that we as Barbadian people grumble about, but we don't stand up to say anything about it. Then the issue of fuel prices came up, and we would have seen an increase in fuel prices from the beginning of this month, I believe, to about $3.88. And it really got me thinking and doing some research. And upon my research, I realized that Barbados actually has the 13th highest fuel price in the entire world per liter. And then it caused me to dig a little deeper in terms of why is that the case? Why is it that Barbados has a fuel price of over $1.20 more than the nearest Caribbean neighbor, i.e. Grenada? And in my research, I found that we all got the oil from the same place. So why is it that Barbados's price is higher? And then it really pushed me to dig deeper, and I was able to confirm this information from three different sources. A large portion of the cost of fuel in Barbados actually is attributed to taxes.
Now that you have opened up this can of worms for us here, The Prime Minister would have offered an explanation as to why, you know, that fuel levy cannot be reduced. And she has offered, as I would have mentioned in earlier in the introduction, an olive branch in the capping of the VAT. Do you think that this would appease or is enough, to appease your concerns?
I think it's less about appeasing my concern and more or less addressing the issues that are that Bajan people are countering on a day-to-day basis. The rising cost of living is definitely one thing, but based on my conversation so far, I don't think capping the VAT is going to do a lot for the price of the fuel. Based on preliminary conversations, from my understanding, they're looking to cap the VAT at about, I think, 50 cents. And right now, it is 58 cents per liter. So to me, that's only like an 8 cents difference. I mean, well, persons may say, you know, 8 cents could go a long way because I'm more sure the price had increased by like 8 or 10 cents. So whatever the case is, the fact of the matter is, to me, I think government can do a lot more where that is concerned.
So you're saying that really that the capping of the VAT, it's a start, but not enough. But what about the explanation that given the hit to the public coffers, the over $600 million in losses to the government coffers, as well as a $2 billion decline in the economy, we can't afford to drop any or reduce any taxes from anywhere at this point. I mean, does that explanation hold water for you as well?
Well, funny enough, I like to try to be fair. I mean, I understand the position of the government, but I also understand the position of the people. And from the perspective of the government is that, okay, we need to collect taxes to be able to purchase goods and services in order to provide for the Barbadian people. But on the other hand, if persons are so overtaxed and they are so restricted in terms of their spending, then really and truly, to me, you slow down the economic activity as well. Because reality is that people spend more if they have more, right? If you don't have, let's say, if you don't have $10, you're not going to spend $10. But if you have the $10, you're going to spend the $10. Right? So for me, it's like, okay, they're saying, well, we can't cut taxes and you are holding taxes, but you're also restricting the potential or the buying potential of the consumer. So it kind of negates itself in that sense. Whereas if you give persons an ease, then you cause people to spend more. I mean, I'm not saying remove the tax altogether, but if you lower the taxes as an incentive to get people to spend more, then to me, on the back end, it will net back off itself.
Okay. Now, your protest seems to have a awareness component, the symbolism of the $3.88. If I stand corrected, but that seems to be close to the last point that the gas is now raised to. So it seems to have an awareness component and a symbolic component. First of all, tell me, what response have you had any feedback as to the response to that protest action?
Yeah, definitely. I've received positive and negative feedback. As I said in a previous interview, on Twitter, because I use social media as my platform to get the message out. So on Twitter, I really received a lot of lashes, as the Bajans would say, a tongue lashing with respect to the approach and how a lot of persons didn't understand it. So they thought it didn't make sense and thought that it would have put a lot of pressure on the gas station attendants and what's not. But then on the other hand, on Instagram, I got full support from persons. A lot of people actually participated in the movement as well. And definitely, yeah, it is a tool for raising awareness. And that was precisely what it was designed for. It wasn't designed to necessarily change anything per se. It wasn't designed to frustrate gas station attendants or persons who work in gas stations or any the type, but it was more to raise awareness to people, to get people to constantly remember, well, look, this $3.88 is a lot of money. Sometimes you go to the gas station and you say, okay, top me up there, and then when the price comes back, you just pay. But what contributes to that high price, you know, the per liter element of it? So Once you constantly see that $3.88, it's a constant reminder to get you thinking and say, well, look, this actually is extremely high. So why is this the case? So in my opinion, I think the initiative was successful because you got certain responses from a minister in finance. You also got the Minister of Energy to respond and also the Prime Minister.
Well, speaking of the Minister of Energy, he made reportedly made a comment that you should drive less. From a basic fundamental level, I think I do understand what he is trying to convey. I mean, I realize that he got some, as you put it, some tongue lashing on social media as well for that statement. But the way the tax was designed from my layman's perspective is that you pay for how often you use the roads. And the more you use the roads, the more you contribute to its demise, and therefore the more you should pay. So ergo, the more you drive, the more you pay. I think that's the logic that he was trying to convey. What are your thoughts on that comment that he made? I mean, driving less as a solution. I know that there are some components like the small business sector that obviously would need to be driving quite often to get their businesses, you know, back up and running, especially in these hard times. But I just want to get your thoughts on his position and his take on the whole thing.
Well, I think that his response was a bit hasty. And I found the response to be a bit insensitive as well, because while I understand the purpose of the tax and how it basically levels out the fact that, you know, if you're on the road every day, you pay in proportion to how often you use the road. I totally get that. But the reason why I said that the response was a bit insensitive was that reality of the situation is that, yes, you can tell persons to drive less, but there are a number of factors that you have to consider when you tell persons this. Like, not everybody has the ability or the flexibility to be able to work from home. That's one thing. The other thing too is that you have to consider the fact that the bus system in Barbados is inefficient. You know, oftentimes you spend way more time waiting on a bus than you actually do in terms of commuting. Then you also have cases and challenges where you can't get public transport in certain areas of Barbados. Another thing too is that, like, I can give you an example. For me, I live in St. Thomas. I work in Christchurch, close to the St. Philip border. And I have to take to school my son every day. It is not feasible for me to take a bus to drop my son off to daycare and then take a bus to go on to school. And I don't have the ability to work from home as many other persons may have. So I found the response to be a bit insensitive. And then when you go a step further as well, you have to consider persons whose nature of business requires them to be on the road each and every day. And also understand the position that we're in economically, in that we're in a pandemic, and persons are not doing that well in terms of entrepreneurship or in terms of commercial businesses. So these are things that they cannot avoid. So while they're on the road every day trying to make ends meet, for instance, a taxi guy, or maybe somebody who is doing a delivery service with respect to food or groceries or what's not, you are basically restricting them and pressuring them into having to pass on this additional cost now to the consumer, and that's detrimental to their business. So I think to say to drive less is a bit one-dimensional, because there's so many different moving parts that you have to consider for people on a day-to-day basis.
If we may tap back a bit to the issue of cost of living, you know, various explanations have been offered. As a matter of fact, the business community is standing firm to the view that really the Barbados has not even been really hit by the international factors that dictate the price increases around the world. And they are also saying in the most recent article that's from the Chamber, that these international factors that influence the price increases are likely to level out the container shortages, etc. However, the experience of many Barbadians, which unlike the laws of physics that dictates what goes up must come down, many are skeptical that those prices, once they are up there, they are there to stay forever. and the only way from there is up. How do you see it? Do you agree with that sentiment, or do you think that things are going to level out? And then while you're at it, could you give me your view on price controls? That's a debate as well right now. Government is saying it's an option on the table. The business community is saying no way, free markets, no price controls. If you could just put those two together in a response for me.
First of all, with respect to the global increase on commodities and what's not, it is evident. There's no lying that commodities in the world have been rising over the last couple of months, especially as a result of COVID. However, I think that is easy to just make these statements and say that is the result of why we are facing the high cost of living in Barbados. But if you look at the trends, even in your personal shopping on a monthly basis or whatever the case is, 1 month you go to the supermarket, you spend, let's say, $50, you get 10 items. 2 weeks later, you go to the supermarket, you spend the same $50, and all of a sudden you're wondering where it has gone. And this is not something that I have made up. This is something that is evident to every single person that goes to the supermarket. But then on the other hand, you have businesses and distribution companies saying, well, we are not passing on this additional cost, or we are not passing on this rising cost to the consumer. However, we will be in the future. So, I mean, it's easy to make these blanket statements and say, okay, that is the reason for it. And this is where I think price control really comes into play, and where it's important. Because while the Barbados Chamber of Commerce cannot find evidence of price gouging, as a consumer, as a person who goes to the supermarket every day, and you buy a tin of tuna today for $2.50, but then next week is $2.80, in your mind, you're trying to grasp what is really going on here. So I think the issue of price control is extremely important, especially for the fair distribution of goods in Barbados. Because a lot of people say, okay, well, if you can't afford to shop at this particular supermarket, then maybe you should go to this other supermarket. But then there are a number of factors that can influence that. Maybe you may be a person who lives in a community where you don't have a car. At this particular supermarket within your geographical location is within walking distance. So you say, okay, well, let me just go there. Rather than somebody who has a vehicle and could go and shop and buy their stuff wholesale at PriceSmart and then go down to Popular and get this thing, or then go into town and get this thing. You have that flexibility. But the reality is that a lot of people don't have that type of flexibility. I've seen persons spend more money in taxi fare to go to different locations to shop than actually what they've spent in order to purchase for their household. So there are a number of factors that have to be considered concerned. So price control, to me, to have fair prices across the board, so when you go to this particular supermarket and this product is this price, you go to the next supermarket and that product is the same price, so it then distributes the wealth evenly.
Want to sell your property or vehicle fast? You can double your chances with Nation Classifieds. Book one-worded advertisements for 1 week or 14 days and double it for free. Both packages include one free photo and free promotion on our websites for 30 days. Nation Classifieds. Double your chances with double the audience and double the value in print, online, and on social media. Call 430-5522 and double the value with Nation Classifieds.
Now, again, speaking from I am only a layman, no accounting background whatsoever, no mathematical, very basic mathematical skills. I can count my salary at the end of the month, but I am having a difficult time grappling how price control will work with varying brands, varying distribution points, varying suppliers. How would it even work? Because all tuna are not created equal. How would you see it working in a scenario such as what I would have described?
Well, the thing is that you first have to understand the dynamics in Barbados, because reality is that supermarkets, they don't bring in goods to sell. They purchase from distributors, and certain distributors have the license, or I guess have the permission, to be the sole distributor of a particular brand or product within a country. So when this particular distributor brings in, let's say, all the Brunswick tuna in Barbados, they now have to sell to the supermarkets that want this brand on their shelves. So they can sell that to the supermarkets at one standard price, because they're the only person who are bringing in Brunswick tuna in the country. The part with the price control now is that giving the supermarkets a particular markup, so that everybody has the same price for this particular can of tuna fish across the board. Now, persons may argue, well, you know, certain brands cost more, and the whole issue of branding and what's not. But in my opinion, I think the price control aspect should be more focused on the basket of goods. The basket of goods meaning the goods that are VAT exempt, that have no VAT on, because these are essential goods and services that persons require. So if you have price control on those basket of goods, that is fine. But then if you want to branch out into buying, I guess, luxury items and stuff like that, then to me, the autonomy should be given to the supermarkets to put the price at what they see fit.
Okay. I want to give you the last word as to the way forward. But I want to premise it by pointing out that the issue of cost of living has not been new, and it was in existence way before COVID. Barbados has always been regarded as a very expensive destination. And it may have gone a little higher now as a result of COVID. The evidence is still yet to be borne out in various investigations and price checks and so on by the Ministry of Commerce. But this is an issue that has to take the discussion beyond just the factors that would have resulted in it during the COVID pandemic. How do you see us addressing this issue within the long term? How do you see us looking at the issue of cost of living, bringing down cost of living in Barbados, which has been rising consistently over the years?
The issue of cost of living to me is directly associated with not just the initial cost of a good or a service, but also the amount of money Barbadians actually pay in taxes. From the time something comes into the port, it is hit with excise tax, all type of environmental levies and what's not. Even if you look at purchasing a car, for instance, sometimes you pay more money in taxes than you actually paid for the car itself. And to me, that is a direct contributor to the cost of living in Barbados. Now, the real question is how do we get away from a system of taxation, or rather, how do we create a more efficient and effective way of taxation that it actually eases the burden of the Barbadian citizen? And to me, that comes with diversifying the economy. I think we are very focused on the industry of tourism and using that as being heavily dependent on that in terms of bringing in foreign exchange, because we need foreign exchange in order to purchase goods and services on the international market, because we don't manufacture a lot of the things that we consume in Barbados. So I think we need to look at various avenues where we can start to invest locally, where it be manufacturing, where it be agriculture, and basically producing more as a country, so that we can move away from bringing in so much in terms of consumption. So I think that is really the start in terms of diversifying the industries that we put so much focus on. It's not to say that we move away from tourism completely. That would be something that contributes to what we need, but we need to produce more as a country.
Okay. Well, Mr. Clark, again, I really want to thank you for taking the time to speaking to me and our listeners as well. And again, I do applaud your activism. It is something that I think more persons, not just in Barbados, need to exercise that right to speak out and to mobilize people on under a common cause. Sometimes not everyone may agree with the cause, but the whole idea of sitting and doing nothing for things that persons see, you know, going a little awry, it's not an option. So again, thank you for taking the time out. And folks, there you have it, Mr. Olajimi Clark with us on the fifth edition of State of Our Nation. Now, I want to wish everyone a pleasant day and do make it a productive one. Thank you.